listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Holiday drivers passing through Pennsylvania on Wednesday may have thought the state was giving them a Thanksgiving gift by not charging for tolls. In actuality, toll workers across the state began a strike on Wednesday, angered by management's refusal to meet their contract demands. Represented by the Teamsters, union members have been working under a contract that expired in September of 2003. The strike continues today, with the Turnpike Commission bringing in temporary workers to collect a flat fee at the tolls.
This week, representatives from food banks throughout the state of New Jersey asked the state legislature for help in assisting the thousands of people in need of not only a Thanksgiving dinner, but food aid year-round.
We were very worried. It was keeping me up at night because we were so seriously short of turkeys. A little more than a week ago, we only had 20, and we were serving 2,600 families.
Patricia Espy is the executive director of the Center for Food Action in New Jersey. She says she's seen a 15% increase in the number of people seeking assistance from last year.
When I first started 17 years ago, a lot of that was single moms and kids. But more and more we're seeing two-parent households with both parents working, and they're still not coming up to the federal poverty level, which is about $18,600 for a family of four.
New Jersey allocated just $338,000 for emergency food this year. According to the Food Research and Action Center, more than 33 million Americans suffer from food insecurity.
More than 34 unions in Brewer, Maine joined together to help collect Thanksgiving meals for 150 families of workers who lost their jobs. Eastern Fine Paper Company closed its doors last January, leaving many workers struggling to find a new job. Dubbed the Solidarity Harvest, the unions collected turkeys, canned goods, and produce from local farmers to put together the Thanksgiving baskets. The giving didn't just begin with Thanksgiving Day. Over the past year, mill workers at International Paper in Bucksport, Maine, have donated more than $50,000 to help out their labor brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket in the U.S. According to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the typical cost of a family health insurance policy was $8,800 in 2003. Rates have been rising in excess of 10% per year. At that rate, a decade from now, a family health insurance policy will cost $21,000 per year. That's 42% of the projected average base wage expected at that time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
I've got some good election news for you today on Hightower Radio. If you're looking for a little good news from the November 2nd election, check out the Clean Money campaigns in Arizona, Maine, and North Carolina. Instead of surrendering their state governments to the big money interests that control Washington and most other state capitals, people in these three states have authorized full public financing for candidates who agree to run clean, which means that these candidates accept none of the corrupting contributions that special interests, primarily corporations, routinely dole out to Democrats, Republicans, and anyone else willing to be bought. By providing a pool of public funds for public elections, we can get public officials that are no longer financially beholden to corporate, union, or other private funders who always have a private agenda attached to their checks. In Maine, this clean election option has been available for three election cycles, and the results are astonishing. 77% of Maine's state House members and 83% of its state senators have now been elected without taking a dime in corporate money. It changes the whole political dynamic, for legislators are free to cast their votes without first checking with their big campaign contributors. Likewise, in Arizona, 23% of state senators and 58% of House members are now free of any dependence on private campaign donors, as are 10 of Arizona's statewide elected officials, including the governor, attorney general, and all four of this year's winning candidates for the State Corporation Commission. Also, North Carolina provided the clean election option this year to candidates for its top judicial seats. And the clean candidates won both races for the Supreme Court and two of the three seats on the Court of Appeals. This is Jim Hightower saying, full public financing is real reform. To bring it to your state, county, city, school district, or whatever, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
Well, Mr. Quinton, I have your loan application here. I see you want to finance one of our big screen TVs.
Oh, yeah, I love that TV.
Of course you do. The thing is, your credit report has a few hiccups or bumps.
Well, bumps, yes.
What we call red flags or warnings.
You see, I can...
Actually, you have huge gaping chasms of incredibly bad decision-making.
Okay, I can explain.
I mean monumental credit mistakes. I mean, phenomenally ridiculous, laughable, really. I mean, oh, Mr. Quinton... I gotta frame this one.
Before you go for a loan, be prepared with Score Power from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit is.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Thanksgiving. Here in the People's Republic of Vermont, high up in the Green Mountains, we are experiencing the weirdest weather I think I have ever experienced in the about 8 years we've lived here now. We're in the middle of a thunderstorm, just an absolute wild thunderstorm. Strangest thing. So if I suddenly vanish from the airwaves or am replaced by a program from February or something, you'll know that the lightning got the power lines. But so far, so good. We're still here. Happy Thanksgiving to you, and I hope you're having a marvelous Thanksgiving Day. Our number 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. It is one of those days. And our website, TomHartman.com, www.TomHartman.com, if you'd like to drop into the chat room, which is already getting well populated. Just wanted to remind Louise, we need to call CRN's hotline and get that stream up. Anyhow, Robert Venables, what happened on the first Thanksgiving? Robert Venables is with us. He's the author of a 2-volume book called American Indian History. And, Robert, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you a lot, Tom. Appreciate it.
I'm pleased to have you here, and thank you for taking time out from your Thanksgiving Day to share this with us. Be sure
to... Well, my pleasure. You're doing important work.
Yeah, thank you. When you say that Hallmark Cards is not likely to promote the fact that the first thing the Pilgrims did when they... Well, in fact, instead of my telling this story, what was the first thing the Pilgrims did when they arrived here?
Well, the first thing the Pilgrims did when they landed at Cape Cod, before they took time to provide shelter for their families, they looted Nauset American Indian graves. And the Nauset people were quite offended by this and drove the Pilgrims off, which is why the Pilgrims had to move and settle among the Wampanoags, who were on the coast proper. But the first thing they did was to loot these Indian graves, because by the time that they had left England in 1620, there were guides to America based on English translations of Spanish documents. And one of the things that the Spanish recommended was, when you got to America, loot Indian graves, because
you'd find
the
gold.
Indians bury valuables with their dead,
yeah.
And they also bury dried food.
And well, and if this was
after both the food and the valuable goods.
Yeah, and if they were doing this based on information from the Spaniards from 100 and 200 years earlier down in Central and South America, They actually, the King of Spain actually apportioned large chunks of Mexico, Central America, and Northern South America out as mining stakes. And over 20 million tons of gold was taken out of mostly graves, as you say, and although a lot of it was also taken off buildings and things, melted down. They had a local tax collector, the King of Spain had right there on the spot, who took the king's 20% off the top and was shipped back to Europe. So, you know, they probably had good reason to think, if the Spaniards had gotten all that gold down south, that there might be some gold up north, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, they were looking for also pearls and any kind of valuables. It's astounding how fast that gold had an effect. By the 1600s, the trade in China includes the gold. Gold is being shipped to China to purchase things for the European Empire, the Spanish.
Yeah, it really is remarkable. In fact, there are some cultural anthropologists, or whatever you would call it, sociologists, who suggest that the much of the rise of the commercial empires of Europe in the 16th, 17th centuries were not so much the result of modern inventions like the corporation, the East India Company, or the one that preceded that, the Dutch East Indies Company, which Queen Elizabeth imitated in December 1601 when she incorporated the British East India Company, or technology, or even, you know, the remnants of the Enlightenment, or the post-plague period, but rather that these were the consequence of all this gold coming from South America.
Well, absolutely. Resources and land are the basis for the United States. The Homestead Act of 1862 was passed by Republicans and a faction of Republicans called the Free Soilers.
Right.
And, of course, there's no such thing as free soil. It was Indian land. And the homesteaders were sent out at the encouragement of the government to basically support the United States government taking Indian land. And after the American Revolution, the successful revolutionaries paid for the American Revolution with land that they seized from American Indians, and they paid their veterans off with land. So it goes. I mean, the Spanish were interested in fighting the Muslims and used the gold from the Western Hemisphere to continue their war with the Muslims. So there's always been this profit-making, also expansionist concept that's behind all of this. And, of course, it's the common people who take it in the neck.
Yeah.
It's the
it's what's behind the concept of empire as opposed to the concept of nation state. I mean, there were a lot of nations that just kind of minded their own business, but those that decided that they were going to become empires, that they were going to reach out and seize the resources of other nations, are the ones that engaged in these kinds of practices by and large, and ended up in many virtually in all cases, actually, you look back on it, collapsing as a consequence of it. You know, Italy denuded their forests so badly, they ran out of wood, fuel, so badly that they couldn't smelt silver any longer at an economical price, which produced the currency crisis of the year 200. And the cost of silver doubled three times in 2 years and threw the entire republic into instability. And that led them to build their wooden ships and go invade Europe and in search of fuel, which was wood back then, and slaves and, you know, all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So we've seen this over and over and over again. But to give them their due, I mean, while it is true that the largest line item budget in George Washington's budget, it was Indian warfare. Also, though, wasn't it true that the vast majority, at least of the initial contact East Coast Indians who died as a result of contact with, or Native Americans who died as a result of contact with Europeans, died as a result of disease that was not intentionally transmitted to them?
Well, certainly, yeah. The smallpox epidemics that the Spanish accidentally introduced spread from Florida in the 1520s, spread from Florida up to western New York by 1525, and they spread along the trade routes. But the answer to that is yes. While they were devastated by smallpox, What happened was the Europeans took advantage of that and exploited that, and so it becomes a part of the conquest to actually use the disease as a way of justifying taking it over. The Puritans in Massachusetts, not the Pilgrims, but the Puritans, gave thanks to their concept of God when a smallpox epidemic wiped out them.
Yeah.
Local people, so that they
Bradford actually wrote about that. He said this was God's grace that laid the ground with all these bodies. It's interesting. I worked for some short time on on a couple of Native American reservations in the Southwest, and I was with a friend who is a distant relative of Geronimo. We were driving the car one day when the song "This Land Is Your Land" came on. And his knuckles just got white on the steering wheel he was driving. I think we need to keep in mind the history of the United States, and at the same time, not flog ourselves for it. It's we need to do what we can to make these things straight. But there is this tendency to say, America is this evil thing or whatever, and I think that's a terrible mistake, isn't it?
I don't think we're alone in that evil. I think what we should do when that comes up is make comparisons. I think that one of the things we can do is to avoid in the future making the same mistakes we've made in the past. But I think we all bear responsibility because we've inherited all the wealth that was seized because of seizure of American Indian land and enslavement of both Indians and blacks, and the suffering of indentured servants. We've all inherited that wealth. I mean, my grandparents, when they moved from London, did not move to Paraguay. They moved to the United States because the United States had a proven record. The conquest was long over, but it had a proven record, and I benefit from that.
As we all do, and so there's some appropriate thanksgiving in that, and an obligation, I think, frankly, for us to be instruments of good in the world, and domestically, certainly, to acknowledge what we've
right.
done.
Right. Guilt is too self-serving. If you're focusing on guilt,
yeah.
You're not going to take action. You're just going to feel terrible.
In fact, people can
wallow. And what you should do is use the initial feeling of guilt as a way of prompting you to action and doing something. And we have a lot to be thankful for on any given day, but we also have an obligation to make sure that other peoples who are not so fortunate are able to recover from the devastations that, unfortunately, this global economy has incurred.
Yeah, we're speaking with Robert Venables. He's the author of the 2-volume book, American Indian History. And you're with Cornell University?
Yeah, I teach an American Indian Studies course here.
That's right.
At Cornell.
You state that the original Thanksgiving held great potential for cooperation. We have about a minute left here, by the way. I'm wondering what happened after that.
What happened after that is the white children of the first Thanksgiving and the red children of the first Thanksgiving slaughtered each other in the 1670s, and the white children won the war and sold the red children into slavery in Virginia and the Caribbean, Spain, and Morocco. Some 800 men, women, and children were shipped out by the Puritans, the Pilgrims, and even Roger Williams in Rhode Island made a huge profit by selling POWs into slavery.
Yeah, as did Columbus. That was his first export when he first arrived.
So in
20, 30 seconds we have left, Robert Venables, I'm wondering, what are you thankful for today?
Well, I start with my family, and then I move to my friends, and then I thank the Creator for all the gifts that all of us have been given, and I'm reminded that there's a spiritual obligation that humans have not only to other humans but to all the beings of Creator's world.
Amen. Well said. Robert Venables, the author of the two-volume American Indian History. Mr. Venables, thank you very much. Dr. Venables,
thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much for being with us today. I do appreciate it. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Some days I think of those turkeys in Texas, the way they'd all gobble when old Bill raised his voice. Then in Big Sandy, you could get that reaction.
Poor
course, them being turkeys, well, they hadn't much choice.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The history of Thanksgiving, just real quickly. The Plymouth Colony was established in 1621 after a winter of starvation. Governor William Bradford proclaimed the first day of Thanksgiving. George Washington then did it again on November 26, 1789. This was over 100 years, 150 years later. And then about 100 years after, well, about 60 years after that, 70 years after that, Abraham Lincoln, at the urging of Sarah J. Hale, started Thanksgiving all over again in the United States in 1863. And it sort of stuck then. In 39, 40, and 41, Franklin Roosevelt turned it into a more of a national holiday by proclaiming it as the official third day of November, third Thursday of November. In 41, it was, then people were getting confused, and so in 41 they made it the fourth Thursday of November, in apparently in memory of the four wild turkeys served at the Pilgrims' first Thanksgiving feast, or so the story goes. Miles Standish was one of 102 English settlers who sailed on the Mayflower in 1602. He had served in Queen Elizabeth's army and was chosen to command the first group of men to go ashore when the ship reached New England. The HistoryChannel.com has a great little piece on this, and they actually have some actors playing Miles Standish and Eleanor Billington. And I just want to share just a little clip from this. This is from HistoryChannel.com. If you were to ask Miles Standish if he were here today, let's have a pilgrim on the program. What was your role in the harvest feast of 1621?
Yes, yes. When our harvest was gotten in, our governor called for a few of us men to go out fowling. And the nature of the country is so bounteous that four of us, in but a day, were able to come up and shoot as many fowl as could feed the whole town for a week. We had decided, after having received and gathered in this fair little harvest, that we should celebrate together after a manner and rejoice at how well begun our plantation was and how hard bought that first harvest was. So many had died the winter we had arrived. So many hardships we had to overcome. But yet, there we was. We were joined. Not only was it the small number of folk that was in the town, about 50 altogether, but also we was joined by the great king of the Indians, Massasoit is his name, and he brought with him 90 of his men. And we did feast together for several days.
This was an extension of the tradition of the potlatch, actually, where in Native American communities and Native communities all over the world, where the community or the group or the person who brings the most food has the highest status. Here's Eleanor Blington, or Billington, rather, from the History Channel, talking about her experience.
I will admit, I were greatly feared. My husband would tell us great stories that he had heard of what beasts these men were. We even heard once that they had great mouths in the middle of their own bellies, where they'd do just as well to eat you as to be nice to you. So I were quite fearful, and we were not here more than a few months when a great naked man come walking down the hill and spoke to us in English, and I was not trustful of him at all. I took to my hovel and stayed within it till my husband did say that the man seemed to be civil for a savage, and that we should not be feared. And then, indeed, my son himself were lost in the woods, and they did steal of him and take him greatly downway to the very tip of Cape Cod and send message to that they had him and that they should come and fetch him. And they all, the menfolk, had to go get him, and I fear I'd never see him again. But he were returned safely, and in truth, he were returned quite revered. He had many great deeds and things on him, as if he were a king himself. And of course, he did never leave to tell of that story, and still does to this day.
And still tells of it to this day. This is one of the great stories that most people are unfamiliar with, is how many Europeans went off to join the Native Americans in North America. They were called White Indians, and it was actually considered quite a social problem. Very, very interesting. It's a whole other topic for another day, but happy Thanksgiving, by the way. 29 minutes past the hour.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own,
Let go, let go. I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Holiday drivers passing through Pennsylvania on Wednesday may have thought that the state was giving them a Thanksgiving gift by not charging for tolls. In actuality, toll workers across the state began a strike on Wednesday, angered by management's refusal to meet their contract demands. Represented by the Teamsters, union members have been working under a contract that expired in September of 2003. The strike continues today, with the Turnpike Commission bringing in temporary workers to collect a flat fee at the tolls.
This week, representatives from banks throughout the state of New Jersey asked the state legislature for help in assisting the thousands of people in need of not only a Thanksgiving dinner, but food aid year-round.
We were very worried. It was keeping me up at night because we were so seriously short of turkeys. A little more than a week ago, we only had 20, and we were serving 2,600 families.
Patricia Espy is the executive director of the Center for Food Action in New Jersey. She says she's seen a 15% increase in the number of people seeking assistance from last year.
When I first started 17 years ago, a lot of that was single moms and kids. But more and more we're seeing two-parent households with both parents working, and they're still not coming up to the federal poverty level, which is about $18,600 for a family of four.
New Jersey allocated just $338,000 for emergency food this year. According to the Food Research and Action Center, more than 33 million Americans suffer from food insecurity.
More than 34 unions in Brewer, Maine joined together to help collect Thanksgiving meals for 150 families of workers who lost their jobs. Eastern Fine Paper Company closed its doors last January, leaving many workers struggling to find a new job. Dubbed the Solidarity Harvest, the unions collected turkeys, canned goods, and produce from local farmers to put together the Thanksgiving baskets. The giving didn't just begin with Thanksgiving Day. Over the past year, mill workers at International Paper in Bucksport, Maine, have donated more than $50,000 to help out their labor brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket in the U.S. According to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the typical cost of a family health insurance policy was $8,800 in 2003. Rates have been rising in excess of 10% per year. At that rate, a decade from now, a family health insurance policy will cost $21,000 per year. That's 42% of the projected average base wage expected at that time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In a world where everybody's falling apart, one by one, heart by heart,
you and I stay together and we never even cry.
There you go. We'll all make it through no matter what they do to this economy, no matter what they do to this country. We will all make it through. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman here with you, our toll-free telephone number. TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, already well-populated with folks, just click the live chat button. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Jeff Cohen founded FAIR. The New York-based Media Watch Group. He's been a nationally syndicated columnist, TV commentator, and communications director for the Kucinich for President campaign. Jeff was also the executive producer, Jeff, of Phil Donahue's show?
No,
the senior producer was the title?
Producer, yeah. On the primetime MSNBC Donahue show.
Right, yeah. That must have been a wild gig, and I'd like to talk to you about that. But first, this new Gallup poll that was just reported in E&P, editor and publisher, that suggests that the news media's credibility has declined significantly among the public just in the last year or two. It's dropped from, over the last 10 years, it held steady in the range of 55%, more or less, that people said, yes, they find mainstream media totally credible. Now it's down around 44%, a really precipitous decline. And in this article, in fact, the headline is, "Thanks, Dan, Gallup finds trust in media at new low." And they speculate that it all has to do with Dan Rather. I would think that it would have to do more with the reporting of the war in Iraq and the way that the media helped gin up the war. I mean, if somebody asked me, and I think probably, you know, a good chunk of the half of America, more or less, that voted for John Kerry, do you have a problem with the mainstream media? I would have said, yeah, I don't think that they're credible because they didn't present both sides of what was going on in the debate leading up to the war. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's the real sea change. I think I haven't looked at this Gallup poll, but what you're saying definitely conforms with what I've been learning, not just in the last year or two, but in the last, I'd say, since Florida of 2000,
yeah.
That there were always these right-wing groups, and I describe it in, you know, my latest speech that's on Common Dreams. There's always been these right-wing groups that have attacked the liberal media and have rallied cultural conservatives, especially against not news, but entertainment programming. So you have people that have been incensed by what they perceive as sleaze on TV and shock jocks on radio, and they blame that on the liberal media. I'm talking about so-called values voters or
right.
cultural conservatives.
Right.
And they don't realize that what they're upset about isn't so much the liberal media, it's the libertine media. It's presented to them not by liberals, but the owners of these channels are Rupert Murdoch, who's a right-winger, Sumner Redstone of Viacom, who endorsed Bush, General Electric, which owns NBC, a Republican company. So there's all these right-wing companies pushing programs that are indeed often sleazy, and the reaction of cultural conservatives is, I don't trust the liberal media.
Right.
So that's been going on for decades. I agree with you that yeah. the new thing in the last few years...
So this has to do with news, actually.
You know, I believe that FAIR can take some credit for this, and other groups, and of course the turn of events, that there are many, many Democrats, many, many liberals, many, many progressives who just don't believe the media anymore. They've seen it wrong about the Florida recount coverage. They've seen it wrong in the 2000 campaign coverage where every minor error of fact, some so minor you couldn't even recognize them as errors of fact on the part of Gore, were blown into huge things while Bush was telling major whoppers in the debates in 2000, all the way through the Florida recount, the war coverage, as you say, the lead up to the war, the coverage during the war, and now you've got to the point where people don't trust, except for perhaps Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, that the media will even scrutinize whether there was hanky-panky in Ohio or Florida.
Right.
So I feel that's the difference, is, and it's a good development, that people that are progressive, that are liberal, that are Democrats, that are union activists, they don't trust the media. And that's very important, because if you begin with the premise that you can't trust the corporate-dominated media, then it might lead you to take action, which is to look for independent sources of news like the Tom Hartman show.
Well, thank you, Jeff. We're talking with Jeff Cohen, the founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. FAIR.org is the website, among other things, other many extraordinary things you've done in your life, Jeff. And the Gallup report here about the news industry, here's a quote from their summary. They said, "Clearly, something new has happened to shake public confidence in the media. But whether that something is the recent CBS News controversy is a matter of speculation," they say. And, even raising it in my mind, because, again, the conservatives are still spinning this that Dan Rather got the story wrong. He didn't. He got the story absolutely right. He just had been fed by somebody a forged document to back up several other solid pieces of evidence that he had. But that's a whole other thing. And,
right.
And,
but I think you've hit on something, that here's something that's being seized by the right wing, when it really shows the as why they're upset with the liberal media, but it really shows the right-wing power in the mainstream media, that they've kept this one stupid story alive as the centerpiece of media bias, while the media has been engaging in so much omission and distortion all along the way in the recent months, and all we ever hear about is the one Dan Rather forged document. It's sort of silly.
And in fact, their version of the story is very often very deceptively told. It's told that Dan Rather got the story wrong about George W. Bush, and Dan Rather did not get the story wrong about George W. Bush. He got it all. Everything was right. He continues to stand behind all of the facts in the story. The only problem is that he had a couple of documents that were part of a large body of supporting material that had maybe been forged. I'm not even sure if the legitimacy of the forgery, the reality of the forgery has been determined yet.
I'm convinced that they're forged, and it's shoddy journalism to go on the air with documents like that. Yeah. But you're right, as Fair said in an activist alert at the time, there were stories breaking in the Boston Globe, the Associated Press, pushing the story forward about how Bush had not even served out his National Guard service, new evidence, and because the right wing is so dominant, they were able to focus like a laser beam on Dan Rather and the disputed documents as a way of subverting what the media, what other few reporters were doing, even in mainstream outlets, to push the story forward, and overnight the story was ended.
Now, in this,
and that's why, as you know, some people think Karl Rove was probably behind the forgery.
Yeah,
we will never know, probably.
And you're right. It's interesting. I spoke with Bev Harris this morning on the phone at blackboxvoting.org. She's going to be in our program tomorrow, and she's down in Florida, or was. She's home for Thanksgiving, but she was down in Florida yesterday, and they brought in a bunch of CNN reporters. She had screenshots that were provided to her by the Volusia County folks of the central tabulator records that showed clear evidence that on two occasions on election night, some external source had gotten into that machine, into the central tabulator. She showed clear evidence that the original poll, they call them poll tapes, the original summaries of the vote from the individual precincts, numbers did not match the numbers that the county submitted to the state, that they were altered somewhere along the way, whether it was done when the machine, if the machine was hacked, whether it happened then or whether it was done intentionally later or what, nobody knows. But this was clear evidence of vote fraud in this county, and she laid this out for some reporters from CNN, and she said that, they said, "We're not interested."
Yeah.
We're not interested. Why would that be?
It doesn't surprise me, because reporters are sort of like a herd, and those that go off on their own, usually if they stray too far from the herd, they often get chopped up.
Yeah, that reporter doesn't want to be the next Dan Rather in the crosshairs of
found,
it. Right.
As I found that there's a lot of fear in the mainstream media, and the overriding fear is of doing anything that could get you or your news outlet accused of being liberal.
Yeah, and,
so that's,
and,
why
and
well, that's why you're getting all that soft coverage of Bush.
Sure, sure. And the larger fear really is a personal fear. It's a fear of losing a very, very good job, because by the time these people reach the point where they're on-air personalities with national media, they're making very good salaries.
I can speak from experience.
Yeah, and
they are very, very well paid. If you're on air, you're ridiculously paid, as I was for a short time. And even if you're a high-level producer, you're ridiculously well paid compared to the average working person.
Yeah.
And to stay in that club, you don't want to get too far afield.
Yeah,
you don't want to get stray away from the herd.
You got to go
really
along to get along.
Sad.
Yeah, go along to get along. Now, you mentioned in your article on Common Dreams that when you were the producer and on-air commentator at MSNBC and the senior producer of the Donahue Show, that there were specific terms under which you had to operate when you booked guests who had political opinions.
Right.
And I found this fascinating.
Of the show, every time we booked a guest who was anti-war, we had to book two guests who were pro-war. If we booked two guests on the left, we had to book three guests from the right. At one meeting, a producer suggested booking Michael Moore and was told that she'd have to have three right-wingers for balance. Now, the interesting thing is, this was never really explained to us to the extent, and I you know, stormed out of some sessions over that policy.
Yeah.
At one point, we got an explanation, well, Phil is sort of a liberal, so he counts as someone on the left side. And what was really curious about that is I'd never seen that policy applied to any other show.
Right.
And
you get,
the
you
Donahue
get right.
show was terminated right before the war in Iraq broke out.
Yeah.
They hired Joe Scarborough, who's on the right. But Joe Scarborough doesn't have this rule. It was a rule that was dreamed up explicitly so that Phil Donahue could not be Phil Donahue. When people ask me what's wrong with Fox News, I said, well, you have that fair and balanced slogan, which almost is consumer fraud. But if there was a conservative network, avowedly conservative, there'd be no problem with it as long as there was a network on the left that was offering counter-programming.
And this is,
I learned at MSNBC, we weren't even allowed to counter-program against Fox 1 hour a day.
Yeah,
and that was largely because of GE's ownership of MSNBC. The corporate ownership of the media is what prevents there from being a real 24-hour alternative to Fox.
Well, this is the point that I make.
Who would comply?
Yeah, this is a point I've made repeatedly. When I was growing up in Michigan, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and there was the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News were the two major papers. I mean, Lansing had a couple of papers too, but those were the two big papers. And the Detroit Free Press was the paper that had an entire section devoted to business. And in that business section, you'd find all the stuff about the stock market and this, that, and the other thing. The Detroit News had an entire section devoted to labor. And they would talk about what was going on with the unions and organizing activity and this, that, and the other thing. And you know, the by and large, the Democrats and the union members read the news, and the people who were the corporate folks read the Free Press. It was kind of the Republican paper and the Democratic paper. And then, of course, there was other stuff all over the spectrum. Historically, we've referred to the press as the fourth estate, as if it were part of the normal functioning of democracy in the United States, as if it was one of the aspects of a functioning democracy. And of course, Jefferson talked about that at length. In fact, in his January 28, 1786 letter to James Curry, he said, "Our liberty depends on the freedom of the press, and that cannot be limited without being lost." How is it that, or what do you think has brought about this incredible consolidation under very conservative corporate control of so much of the media of the United States that just in my lifetime, I mean, I'm 53, just in my lifetime, I've been able to see this dramatic shift from the 50s and 60s, the press of the 50s, 60s, and I'd say 70s. I'd say this really started happening when Reagan became president until today.
Yeah, I don't think there's a mystery to what happened. The beginning with Reagan, they started deregulating the media on behalf of big corporations, where corporations would have a wish list and the Reagan FCC would start fulfilling it. That continued through Bush 1. It continued heavily through Clinton Gore for 8 years and continues now with Bush 2 and an FCC chair named Michael Powell. Yeah. Both major parties have received huge amounts of money from media corporations over the last 25 years. And over the last 25 years, whether it's been a Democrat in the White House or a Republican in the White House, they have continually taken away caps, taken away restrictions, ended old regulations that allowed the media to concentrate in fewer and fewer hands. And along the process of those 20, 25 years, one of the biggest changes was the Telecommunications Reform Act of 1996, the misnamed act.
Right.
And Clinton was getting huge amounts of money from these corporations. So all the different telecommunications industries got together in different rooms. They made up their plan of what they wanted. They basically wrote the bill. There were a couple issues in which long-distance carriers and the baby bells were arguing, and there was some conflict when they couldn't agree. But basically, the telecommunications bill was pushed by Clinton, pushed by Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, and you can look right there as a dividing line, or a fork in the road that made things even worse than they were already going. So
totally.
That before the Telecommunications Act of 1996, a company like Sinclair Broadcasting had about 10 TV stations. Now they have 62 TV stations,
right.
And you know that's the right-wing channel that was trying to get that Kerry-bashing documentary on right before the current election.
And on that, we've got to end it, Jeff. I'm sorry, we've run out of time here. But Jeff Cohen, I so appreciate you being on the program today and sharing this information with us.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Actually, Jeff, can you stick around for just a minute until after this break? I have one other question I'd like to ask you.
Okay, sure.
Okay, great, thanks.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is the Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Recently, AT&T announced it is outsourcing 140 jobs from a Massachusetts call center to New Delhi, an American trend that's providing widespread debate. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
In his nomination speech, President Bush said the world is changing, but he will protect American jobs.
We now compete in a global market that provides new buyers for our goods, but new competition for our workers. To create jobs, we will expand trade and level the playing field to sell American goods and services across the globe.
But at the New York Society for Ethical Culture in Midtown Manhattan, National Affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, William Greider, said American trade indebtedness to other countries, which is closely tied to wage arbitration, is breaking the shrinking middle class. The liberal magazine, The Nation, and the economically conservative, The Economist, hotly debated outsourcing. According to some studies, more than 400,000 jobs will be outsourced to cheaper markets this year, a trend that seems to be inevitable by free trade policies. Sitting on the nation side of the table, Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, said the world of the World Trade Organization is a contradiction and that the WTO are simply handcuffs. But Clive Crook is deputy editor for The Economist. He said the American economy is the most resilient and new industries will replace those lost to outsourcing.
American employment, despite intense globalization of the past 2 decades now, has not gone up.
But those new industries are unknown. By the end of the debate, the audience was still split in its opinions, but an estimated 90 jobs were moved overseas in those 2 hours. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's so easy to dream of the days gone by. It's so hard to think of the times to come.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We're talking with Jeff Cohen, the founder of FAIR, the former senior producer of The Donahue Show. And, Jeff, I thank you so much for holding on. This is a question that I know many of our listeners are probably curious about, and it's a story that I want to get out. And that is, what happened to Donahue? Phil Donahue had the most highly rated show on MSNBC, higher even than Chris Matthews, as I recall. And yet,
right.
Boom, he was knocked off the air. Why?
Well, the fear was revealed in a memo that surfaced the day the show was terminated. This was an internal NBC memo that was never supposed to get out. I've already described to you and your audience how we were, you know, they wouldn't let us put on guests. We had to almost outfox Fox in the last couple months. So then the show's terminated, and this memo surfaces that says, Phil Donahue represents a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives, unquote. Now, that's what I understood journalism was supposed to do,
right,
was to present skeptics and critics of the powers that be. Now, this NBC memo goes on to describe, and again, it was never supposed to be made public. This is a leaked internal memo, describes a nightmare scenario where Donahue, quote, would become a home for the liberal anti-war agenda. At the same time, our competitors will be waving the flag at every opportunity, unquote. Now, if you watched MSNBC after they terminated me, after they terminated Donahue, no one waved the flag more than them, not even Fox. And when journalists are so busy waving a flag, they can't do what their jobs are, which is to ask questions of those in power. Instead of waving flags, if the TV networks had been pressing the Bush administration on their claims about Iraq, that war might have been averted, that war that has dug our country into a quagmire. So
this wasn't even waving a flag, Jeff. This was promoting a particular administration, not the nation.
One
particular administration.
Surrender. White flag of journalistic surrender.
Yeah.
That we are going to help this administration by taking off people like Donahue, who present critics of the administration. That anyone at NBC could write or receive such a memo at the top management of NBC and not understand that this memo was striking against the essence of journalism in a democracy, it's really something. But again, the corporations that run the media, they're not interested in journalism.
Yeah.
They're interested in currying favor with the conservative administration that will give their corporate parent even more giveaways, more subsidies,
and
more deregulation.
Not to mention profits from infotainment. Well said. Jeff Cohen, the founder of FAIR, former senior producer of The Donahue Show. Thanks so much for being with us today, Jeff. I do appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Tom. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Holiday drivers passing through Pennsylvania on Wednesday may have thought the state was giving them a Thanksgiving gift by not charging for tolls. In actuality, toll workers across the state began a strike on Wednesday, angered by management's refusal to meet their contract demands. Represented by the Teamsters, union members have been working under a contract that expired in September of 2003. The strike continues today, with the Turnpike Commission bringing in temporary workers to collect a flat fee at the tolls.
This week, representatives from food banks throughout the state of New Jersey asked the state legislature for help in assisting the thousands of people in need of not only a Thanksgiving dinner, but food aid year-round.
We were very worried. It was keeping me up at night because we were so seriously short of turkeys. A little more than a week ago, we only had 20, and we were serving 2,600 families.
Patricia Espy is the executive director of the Center for Food Action in New Jersey. She says she's seen a 15% increase in the number of people seeking assistance from last year.
When I first started 17 years ago, a lot of that was single moms and kids. But more and more we're seeing two-parent households with both parents working, and they're still not coming up to the federal poverty level, which is about $18,600 for a family of four.
New Jersey allocated just $338,000 for emergency food this year. According to the Food Research and Action Center, more than 33 million Americans suffer from food insecurity.
More than 34 unions in Brewer, Maine joined together to help collect Thanksgiving meals for 150 families of workers who lost their jobs. Eastern Fine Paper Company closed its doors last January, leaving many workers struggling to find a new job. Dubbed the Solidarity Harvest, the unions collected turkeys, canned goods, and produce from local farmers to put together the Thanksgiving baskets. The giving didn't just begin with Thanksgiving Day. Over the past year, mill workers at International Paper in Bucksport, Maine, have donated more than $50,000 to help out their labor brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket in the U.S. According to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the typical cost of a family health insurance policy was $8,800 in 2003. Rates have been rising in excess of 10% per year. At that rate, a decade from now, a family health insurance policy will cost $21,000 per year. That's 42% of the projected average base wage expected at that time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by Billionaires for Bush.
A question for those of you who voted for George W.
Were you casting your ballot in support of letting industry put more toxic pollutants in your air and generally turning environmental policy over to the tender mercies of corporate polluters and plunderers? Well, whether that's what you meant or not, the Bushites are using your vote as their excuse to do all of the above and more. Quote, "The election is a validation of our philosophy and agenda," crowed Michael Levitt, Bush's corporate-minded head of the EPA, claiming that they now have a mandate to do environmental favors for various industries. First up will be their perversely named Clear Skies Bill. Far from clearing our skies, it will let utilities and other polluters pump an additional 42 tons of deadly poisons into our air and lungs each year. Ironically, this industry-written legislation would undermine the clean air standards enacted by Georgia's own daddy, Bush the First. Also, the White House and oil lobbyists are reviving their old fight to allow oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The plunderers lost this fight in Georgia's first term, but now they claim that the election gives them a green light to roll their trucks, rigs, and pipelines into the heart of this national refuge. Another priority is to allow more mining and other destructive energy projects on public lands and parks in western states, a proposal that, in the past, has angered many conservative ranchers, farmers, hunters, and anglers. In addition, the Bushites are planning to weaken other environmental protections at the behest of big developers, timber barons, and others. Millions of Americans who thought they were voting for a man who stands for high moral principle are about to see the real Bush, a man who stands for the right of corporate power to run roughshod over our natural resources and public health. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bush talked a lot about God in his campaign, but he was deceivingly quiet about what he plans to do to God's green earth.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or...
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
As in liberal democracy, that. Welcome back. Well, actually, depends on where in the world you are, you use that word. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, and cable television systems in 29 states on cable radio network, with archives at White Rose Society, TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our chat room, well populated today. It's great to see all these folks in here on this beautiful Thanksgiving Day here in the United States. 1-866-889-8894, also our telephone number if you'd like to get in on the program. Tomorrow is historically or traditionally or whatever. Traditionally is a lousy word, I think, to use for it, but it's become probably the most significant, the largest, the most aggressive shopping day of the year. And so Adbusters Magazine, adbusters.org, one of my favorite websites on the planet, and Adbusters Magazine, one of my favorite magazines, have for a number of years been calling for this to be Buy Nothing Day. Let me just share with you an ad that is playing on some media, and some media just won't even carry it. Here it is. This is from Adbusters.
The average North American consumes five times more than a Mexican, 10 times more than a Chinese person, and 30 times more than a person from India. We are the most voracious consumers in the world. A world that could die because of the way we North Americans live. Give it a rest. November 26 is Buy Nothing Day.
Buy Nothing Day. Colly Lawson is the publisher, editor of AdBusters, founder of this whole shooting match there, aren't you, Colly?
Yes, I guess so, yes. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Well, thank you, and welcome to the program. I'm so pleased to have you with us. I've been such a fan of your work for years. And
I really enjoyed your last book. It was great.
Oh, thank you. Which one was that?
The one about corporations.
Oh, Unequal Protection.
A book that's never been written about corporations. It's even better than my book, Culture Jam.
Culture Jam is a pretty powerful book. Let's set the Mutual Admiration Society stuff for later.
Right.
You talk about the doomsday economy. And I love this phrase, and I believe that I first encountered it in your work or on your website. And tell us, what is the doomsday economy?
I think that there's there are a number of different ways of measuring economic progress. The most common one, of course, is the GDP, and the GDP keeps on shooting up exponentially forever by the look of it. But there are some other indicators of economic progress, especially one that I like very much, put out by a group called Redefining Progress in San Francisco, and they call their indicator the GPI, and instead of just adding everything like with the GDP, they also start subtracting some of the negative sides of our way of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you compare the GDP curve with the GPI curve, then something very interesting happens. You notice that the GDP keeps on going up, but the GPI starts leveling off around the 1970s, 1980s, and then for the last 10 years or so, it actually starts going down.
Yes, I was,
we have a situation where our global economic system, instead of progressing like we keep on thinking, it may actually be regressing.
Yes.
Once you start adding in the climate change and the cod fish that are no longer in the Atlantic and the fact that we're running out of oil and so on, then you actually have a very dark picture of the global economy and a very strange, horrendous kind of a feeling suddenly comes out, and you realize that we're actually living off the backs of future generations. We've actually got a doomsday machine. Our global economy is a doomsday machine.
Yeah, and
if we don't change course, if we don't recode that machine, then we may actually, you know, create a world that's going to be very, very hard for our children to live in.
And we've in many ways, just in the very simple economies, created a system that has positive feedback loops where there should be negative feedback loops. For example, if somebody gets sick, the system, it increases gross domestic product, and that's viewed by economists as a good thing. And yet, getting sick isn't a high value for human beings. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, the real culprit here is the kind of economic paradigm called the neoclassical economic paradigm, which is taught as a matter of fact in just about every economics department in every university in the world, really.
Yeah.
This system is fundamentally flawed because it only measures money flows. It doesn't actually measure natural flows. So, for example, if the codfish disappear from the Atlantic, which they have, then this is somehow magically not counted by anybody. It's not part of the neoclassical economic paradigm. In my opinion, the real deep-down thing we need to do is for economic students and especially the PhD students who should know better, you know, we should start talking back against our economics professors and start asking them, how do you measure progress?
That's right.
If they cannot answer that question, then go after them.
Well, and in fact, you folks have done that. Here is an ad that AdBusters produced. I think this was about 2 years ago that I pulled this thing off your website. I'm assuming it's still up there. But this is called Economists Must Learn to Subtract.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
That's such a great line. Economists must learn to subtract. That was just extraordinary.
Yeah, we made that ad almost 8-9 years ago now, and it's had quite a bit of circulation, but you know, the neoclassical paradigm still reigns supreme.
Yeah. Well, it's and at the same time, there are a lot of culture jammers out there. There are a lot of people who are trying to wake up the world. One of the things that that when I was writing Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which is a book that talks about the end of oil, you know, the fact yeah. that we're up against this, you know, oil is, of course, ancient sunlight, and or the energy from ancient sunlight. And a good chunk of the book, maybe a quarter of the book, is devoted to how what we would call modern societies, how Native American societies, Aboriginal societies, human, you know, well-developed, fairly sophisticated, quite sophisticated, in fact, in some cases, exquisitely sophisticated societies, balanced themselves against their environment. And I drew very heavily on Peter Farb's work. He wrote Man's Rise to Civilization, which is, I think, the best anthropological treatise on Native Americans that has ever been written. It takes a whole bunch of different tribes and just breaks them down and how their societies were organized pre-contact to the extent that we could find out. And one of the points that I make in that book that I learned from Farb is that, and then has been corroborated over and over again, is that in our society, in this kind of Western, in this neoclassical economy, our contemporary society, we work all day long to make stuff, goods or services, and then we consume that stuff, and that becomes a cycle. If you can just imagine, you know, the up curve is make, 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 and then the down curve is consume, 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 so that you can then make, 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 so that you can then consume, consume, consume. And the thing that is keeping the wheel spinning is goods and services. Whereas in more traditional societies, what people make all day long and what they all consume is not goods and services, but it's safety and security. That's the currency of older cultures, is safety and security.
And relationships.
Well, the relationships are one of our, relationships are essential to security and safety.
They manufactured relationships.
Well, exactly. I mean, we're artificially creating these things. And
whereas our culture, and this incredible $450 billion a year advertising industry, what we're manufacturing is desire and envy.
Yes. Yeah, and these, and among other things, and insecurity, and fear, and incompetence. You know, oh, I'm not good. The sense of incompetence. I'm not good enough. I just have to make my teeth whiter. I just have to, you know, make sure my armpits smell right, or whatever it may be. Absolutely.
Yeah,
and in fact,
strange things about this kind of overconsumption that we've gotten into in the rich parts of the world, which has gone up by a factor of three since the Second World War. I mean, you know, we North Americans now consume 300% more than we did 50, 60 years ago, and yet the studies show that the happiness quotient hasn't even gone up by 1%. We consume three times more, but we're no happier, and we are now consuming so much that the rich 1 billion people on the planet now consume about roughly 86% of all the goods in the global marketplace, leaving a lousy 14% for the rest of the 5 billion people on the planet. And then we wonder why
they're not happy
don't
about
like
it.
Us very
right.
much.
And they're not happy about it.
Why such an incredible breeding ground for terrorism, and why we may be caught in this never-ending war now.
Right.
So this inequity, this incredible consumption binge that we've been on for the last generation or so, I think this is one of the root causes of this war against terror.
I suspect you're right. We're talking with Colly Lawson, who is the founder and editor-in-chief, co-founder of Adbusters magazine, adbusters.org, on the web. Colly, we've got about 2.5 minutes left, and the question that I wanted to pose to you in this time, you and I believe, have somewhat similar paths in that back in the 70s, I worked in the advertising industry. I used to do training to people in the advertising industry. I used to teach creative writing and advertising writing and communications, and then the last business, in fact, that I sold is an advertising agency in Atlanta. Sold that 8 years ago, and we built that up and ran it. And our clients included at least 36 of the Fortune 500, and, you know, on and on. And you worked and lived in the ad industry. We've both been in it. We've both gotten out of it. Yeah. So tell us how you came to – how did you come to Adbusters in a minute and a half here, if you don't mind?
Well, you know, I was born in Estonia, and in my country for half a century, you were not allowed to speak back against the government, and if you did, then there would be dire consequences. And then, you know, 30, 40 years later, I find myself in North America, and I tried to air some TV spot to buy some airtime on some TV stations for my advocacy messages. And the TV stations all said no to me, and I suddenly realized that, here in North America, you're not allowed to speak back against a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the great epiphanies of my life, that this realization that there really is no democracy on the so-called public airwaves, and that one of the issues of issues, that one of the great things that activists have to really fight for is to get a voice. Is to create a free marketplace of ideas where not just the corporations but all of us have a voice, and for us the people to start generating our culture from the bottom up again, because for the last generation or so I feel that more and more our culture has been spoon-fed to us top-down by TV stations and advertising agencies and corporations for their own benefit. And
yeah.
We the people have literally lost our voice. We've lost control over our own culture, and that's why I call myself a culture jammer. And my
there you go. Culture jammy.
Get the culture back.
Kali Lawson, the co-founder and editor-in-chief, Adbusters magazine, adbusters.org. Kali, thank you so much for being with us today.
Pleasure being with you.
I do appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. It's a Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Every morning you send your kids out into a world filled with drugs, peer pressure, alcohol, even violence. How can you be sure they have the skills to find their way home safely? That they can make good decisions when you're not watching over them? This is Barry Williams, urging you to call the Girls and Boys Town National Hotline for help and advice at 1-800-448-3000. The call is free anytime, day or night. 1-800-448-3000. Just call. Your kids will be glad you did. Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa.
Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I've been meek and hard like an oak. I've seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear.
Oh, friends are useful, wonderful, marvelous. Baby, it's Thanksgiving Day. It's the day to, you know, say hi to your friends, hang out with your friends and family, if possible. It's, in fact, it's interesting. I think this is the first Thanksgiving in the 32 years Louise and I have been married that we are spending without our kids or any of our relatives around us. So we're going to go visit some friends after we get off the air this afternoon have Thanksgiving lunch with them. Welcome back to the program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Xavier in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Xavier, what are you thankful for today?
Well, for you.
Well, thank you.
I'm also thankful for that you decided to put on series of programs on NLP.
Uh-huh.
I actually have a point I wanted to make, but I wanted to thank you for a few things first.
Well, thank you. Yeah, go for it.
And
I mean, go for your point.
Okay. Well, you were talking about during the last segment about... I'm a little nervous on the air.
It's just you and me.
Yeah, adbusters and people, you know, whitening their teeth and things like that.
Yeah.
And I have this theory, and I don't want to come off as sounding like woman bashing here because I'm really supportive of women's rights and things like that, but I think there needs to be a men's movement.
I think it
needs to come up to speed a little bit more.
Yeah, are you familiar with Robert Bly and his writings?
Yeah. But my point is that as human beings, we can transcend our animal nature, and men have kind of this history of being kind of brutes and things. But I think the nesting instinct with women, I think, sometimes causes women to select and celebrate the wrong kinds of men. And I just think that we as a culture need to look at that a little bit more.
That's interesting. Xavier, don't you think that testosterone might be the most dangerous drug in the world? I don't see women declaring wars and falling all over themselves.
Margaret Thatcher, Golda Meir.
They're the exceptions. I would say that those are the exceptions that prove the rule. And Cleopatra, I mean, if you want to go back.
Right.
But
yeah,
Helen of Troy.
Came off of this list. And I'm not trying to bash women here. I'm just saying women have testosterone, too, and we need to stop genderizing this.
Why? I think it's very real that men are more hostile isn't the right word,
but
aggressive than women.
You hear a lot of times on the radio, particularly progressive radio, we'll hear about some atrocity that's happened in some country, and they mentioned that women and children are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I hear that, it basically reminds me that men are cannon fodder, men are supposed to be violent. We get all kinds of messages like that, and I'm not saying...
So you're seeing this as another positive feedback loop, where the men have maybe a small tendency towards violence, and then society celebrates it and exaggerates it.
Amplifies it,
right, and so then it becomes greater, and then they watch football and blah-de-blah-de-blah.
Yeah, and I want to make one further point, is that a lot of times... it alienates men and causes them to go over to the other side because that's the only people who... And we need to hold men's feet to the fire and say, look, you need to improve here.
Yeah.
But we also need to start looking at ways that women are complicit in this.
Okay, go over to the other side. What does that mean?
Listen to Rush Limbaugh and start...
That side.
...yourself to that propaganda.
that other side.
Yeah.
Well, I wrote an op-ed piece for Common Dreams a year or so ago called The Conservatives Target Testicles.
Uh-huh.
And it was when Rush Limbaugh came out with his Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox skit. And basically what he was, the message that he was saying is that any woman who aspires to power is a threat to men. And what he's, what he and many conservatives play to is the insecurity of men who feel like they're marginalized, particularly people who you know, don't have the income that they want, can't get the job that they want, they can't find a union, they, you know, they're working three jobs and juggling everything. And the conservatives just play right into that. They get these guys thinking that they should have the same issues as billionaires, you know.
Yeah. We just need to lower taxes. That's a,
and it's really a tragedy, I think. It's a
well, one of the things I find
tragedy.
Real quick.
Sure, we've got 5 seconds.
I love women who are smart, but when, they need to be mature and not snipe at men.
Okay.
I like
all
a
right.
woman who's comfortable with her power.
Okay, got it, Xavier. I'd say the same is true for, let's just say, we need people who are comfortable with their power. But good point. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. The True People's Radio.
Tonight, NBC starts with an all-new one-hour Will and Grace Thanksgiving.
Why don't I get a bottle of champagne?
That's a nice idea.
What would you guys like?
Followed by an all-new Apprentice, down to 6 finalists. Then, just 2 words.
Oh, yeah!
The Seinfeld Story.
Oh, I'm back, baby.
The cast returns in a new Seinfeld special.
Can you believe it? It's happening!
Thanksgiving Thursday, Will and Grace, The Apprentice, and The Seinfeld Special, NBC Tonight.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Holiday drivers passing through Pennsylvania on Wednesday may have thought the state was giving them a Thanksgiving gift by not charging for tolls. In actuality, toll workers across the state began a strike on Wednesday, angered by management's refusal to meet their contract demands. Represented by the Teamsters, union members have been working under a contract that expired in September of 2003. The strike continues today, with the Turnpike Commission bringing in temporary workers to collect a flat fee at the tolls.
This week, representatives from food banks throughout the state of New Jersey asked the state legislature for help in assisting the thousands of people in need of not only a Thanksgiving dinner, but food aid year-round.
We were very worried. It was keeping me up at night because we were so seriously short of turkeys. A little more than a week ago, we only had 20, and we were serving 2,600 families.
Patricia Espy is the executive director of the Center for Food Action in New Jersey. She says she's seen a 15% increase in the number of people seeking assistance from last year.
When I first started 17 years ago, a lot of that was single moms and kids, but more and more we're seeing two-parent households with both parents working, and they're still not coming up to the federal poverty level, which is about $18,600 for a family of four.
New Jersey allocated just $338,000 for emergency food this year. According to the Food Research and Action Center, more than 33 million Americans suffer from food insecurity.
More than 34 unions in Brewer, Maine joined together to help collect Thanksgiving meals for 150 families of workers who lost their jobs. Eastern Fine Paper Company closed its doors last January, leaving many workers struggling to find a new job. Dubbed the Solidarity Harvest, the unions collected turkeys, canned goods, and produce from local farmers to put together the Thanksgiving baskets. The giving didn't just begin with Thanksgiving Day. Over the past year, mill workers at International Paper in Bucksport, Maine, have donated more than $50,000 to help out their labor brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket in the U.S. According to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the typical cost of a family health insurance policy was $8,800 in 2003. Rates have been rising in excess of 10% per year. At that rate, a decade from now, a family health insurance policy will cost $21,000 per year. That's 42% of the projected average base wage expected at that time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you.
And welcome back and happy Thanksgiving. Our quote for the day from Thomas Paine, from his dissertation on First Principles of Government, published in 1791. He that would make his own liberty secure must guard even his enemy from oppression. For if he violates this duty, he establishes a precedent that will reach to himself. One of the most brilliant of the writers of the era of the founding of this country. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you're outside the United States, 1-802-229-2288. And Harriet in Bellevue, Washington on the line. Hey, Harriet, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I need to put a little bit of a damper on the Thanksgiving tone here, but the situation in the Ukraine has kind of gotten me a little on the upset side.
Okay. It's interesting. This morning, I just have to share this with you real quickly. I woke up at 5 o'clock this morning, and from 5 to 6 a.m. here, we have BBC News, and it's a live newscast. And then at 6, NPR starts. And the entire hour of the BBC newscast, which is something they almost never do, they dropped in maybe out of that hour maybe 6 minutes of other news, but the entire hour was about what's going on in the Ukraine from all these different points of view and everything. And then they went to the NPR news, and it was mentioned. It was highlighted, but it was mentioned. I tell you, Europe is very concerned about this because the Ukraine is now bordering Europe, this has tremendous potential to even restart perhaps the Cold War if Russia gets sufficiently upset with us for meddling in this oil-rich country.
That's the whole issue. I mean, I see it totally as meddling, and the idea that the Bush, Rove, Cheney, whoever puppet didn't make it in, that they are now trying to influence the election, saying, no, you didn't get the right guy in. And what's even more outstanding, if you will, is they're saying, well, you had fraud in your election when we had it in ours. And they fail to see the point that if there's fraud in the Ukrainian election, how about investigating ours, too?
Yeah, isn't that the ultimate irony? I mean, Colin Powell's speech the other night, his little soundbite about how we can't recognize a government that hasn't had a legitimate and fair and free election.
Yes.
I suspect that all over America, people were shouting at the television. You know,
I was.
What? What?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The other thing, too, is that Putin has already said that basically if we don't back off, he might get a little bit more energetically involved with this. And that does sound to me like reinstating the Cold War. And that has me concerned.
Yeah. And this comes a week after Putin has said that he's developing a new generation of nuclear missiles, a new generation of nuclear weapons for which the United States has no defense and which are superior to anything the United States has ever developed, which flies in the face of the Bush Doctrine, which says that we shall not allow any nation to develop military superiority over us.
So, right.
Putin, I think, throwing down the gauntlet there. This could be... Well, let's hope not. Let's hope not. But this could be a very difficult situation. And the Bush administration, I mean, diplomacy is not something, frankly, that I think that they even understand.
They don't, and I have no faith whatsoever of any competence to handle this situation. It just, you know, I think we're going to be in a very, very serious position very soon.
So, Harriet, what are you doing about this?
Calling you.
Okay. Well, that's a good start. I encourage people, call talk radio programs, not just this one, but ones that you disagree with as well. Write letters to the editor of your newspaper. Contact your congressperson. The telephone number for Congress is area code 202-224-3121. You can reach any member of the House or Senate through that phone number, 202-224-3121. And there are People for the American Way has on their website, and you'd have to plug it into Google because I think it's AmericanWay.org, but I could be wrong. Anyhow, People for the American Way has on their website a nice little fill-in-the-blank thing where you can send an email or a fax to your member of Congress, and it's a very, very fancy, very easy to use. In fact, actually, on the homepage, either of my main homepage or the homepage for this show, there is a clickable menu item over on the left-hand side that says communicate with Congress or something like that. You click on that, and it takes you right to that People for the American Way page. So these are all ways that we can make our voices heard. And Harriet, I thank you for calling this program and making yours heard.
Well, I sure do appreciate you taking the time. Great show, Tom.
My pleasure. Thank you. And happy Thanksgiving. Difficult times that we live in and all that, happy Thanksgiving nonetheless. And thank you for your kind wishes. 1-866-889-8894 or 802-229-2288. Gene in Hillsboro, Oregon on the line. Oregon. Excuse me, Gene. My daughter lives in Oregon, and I constantly mispronounce it. How you doing?
Oh, fine. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
I just called. I was listening to the show yesterday, or some of it. I didn't get all of it in. Anyway, I saw the Power of Fear, or Power of a Nightmare documentary that the BBC had up.
Did you see that last night?
I saw the first two programs, and I didn't see the third segment. I'm assuming it's not out yet.
No, it is. They're all there.
They are?
It's on that same webpage. It's the third segment. You just go back and look at the second segment, and you'll see a link for the third one on there. Yeah.
Okay, I'll check on that.
It's a shocker, though, isn't it?
It's quite disturbing. very disturbing. The other thing that I had, real quick, of course, I voted in the last election, and my candidate didn't win. It's probably yours didn't either. And coming up to the next one, I feel kind of discouraged about voting, and I will vote, mind you, but I'd like to see something like an education campaign that somebody could put out that people who either don't vote or vote reluctantly could go to kind of gain some solace and, you know, really like an education.
Yeah.
Like a Juneteenth thing?
Yeah, Gene, you've identified the real key to it. I mean, in 1964, after Barry Goldwater went down in flames, the Republican Party was in absolute shambles. I mean, they were back where they were in 1932 when Roosevelt took over from Hoover. And instead of giving up, instead of throwing their hands up in the air, instead of getting discouraged, they got active. And they started an aggressive program of educating people and teaching people and talking about things and having meetings. And they started, you know, all these other groups that started participating. And it wasn't just the Republican Party. It was conservatives, let's say, broadly, decided to get active and infiltrate the Republican Party. And actually, they did. I mean, they took the thing over. And they ended up with some significant electoral successes. I mean, they've controlled pretty much the last half of the last third of the 20th century, the last quarter, let's say. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that. Bill Clinton was in there, but in any case, I don't want to digress on that. But the point is that the antidote to depression, to concern, to lethargy, whatever it may be, is to get active. And there, we a couple of nights ago, Louise and I were invited to a local group here in Vermont, in central Vermont. These people get together once a month, and somebody else's, you know, home every night. They rotate it every month, and they talk about the politics of the day. And I now know, and I've just from stumbling across, you know, friends of friends, I know of three groups right now in this little town of 9,000 people that I live in that are meeting every month to talk. And they're, one of them is going through a study guide through the from the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILPF.org, on corporate personhood. The one that we met with this last week is they're actually studying my book, What Would Jefferson Do, which it was kind of a hoot. But they take a book every month and they go through it and they have readings from the book and they're all, you know, these are all politically active people. I would encourage you to find such folks in your community, and if you can't find them, create such a thing.
Well, I was going to say we could try putting that up on, like, when they have the meetups for Dean, we could do the same thing for this.
Yeah, yeah, and or just, you know, post a notice in the local food co-op or, you know, whatever the coffee shop or whatever the local gathering place is, you know, or stick it on a tree or something, or just start with your network of friends and just say, hey, what about we get together, and, you know, once a month, and just talk about what's going on. Let's just have a support group, a study group, whatever you want to call it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it really does work. It's really cool. It's a great thing. Gene, thanks for the call. Good to
Thank
hear
you.
From you. And check out that third part of The Power of Nightmares. You will be absolutely amazed by it. The Power of Nightmares, by the way, and thank you for the call. The Power of Nightmares is a program that the BBC produced. There is a link to it. The URL is long and complex. It's on the Information Clearinghouse website. There's a link to it. If you go to tomhartman.com and click on the message area, message boards, it's the top item on the Iraq message board, Iraq and International Affairs. And it takes you right to it. You can just watch it online. It's 3 hours, 3 one-hour programs. And what they do is they deconstruct the neoconservative movement and the Islamic Jihad slash Islamic Brotherhood slash Al-Qaeda movement and show how these two movements arose in parallel, pretty much at the same time. They both started within a few hundred miles of each other here in the United States. And the role that, in particular, Don Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz have played over time in the Straussian neoconservative movement, it's shocking. I don't have a better word for it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too, Rick.
It's been a good show so far. You had a couple of interesting guests, and I guess when I was listening, a couple of things came to my mind. Actually, it was that one caller that mentioned the business about Republicans, like Limbaugh, bashing strong women.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's always liberal. I mean, you know, they don't have any problem with Condoleezza Rice or Elizabeth Dole, people like that, you know.
Right.
And also, with this media business, the libertine media, I guess a couple of things come to mind, a couple of people come to mind. I saw Ann Coulter a while back talking about smut on TV, and she was referring to that Terrell Owens, Nicola Sheridan thing. But yet, you know, this woman, frankly, at times dresses like a streetwalker herself.
I was just going to say, how was she dressed?
Well, you couldn't see her legs this time.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, you know, I got nothing wrong. I have nothing against conservative or liberal women in scanty attire, but the hypocrisy. And then I read something. I didn't hear this live, but I read about it. Mary Madeline was on some program, and they asked her about the issue of lesbianism and gay issues with the Republican Party. And Mary Madeline was supposed to have said something like, well, we've got nothing against lesbians. In fact, I'm a lipstick lesbian myself, and, you know, I'm a pretty liberal guy. I don't know what the heck a lipstick lesbian is. Do you?
I don't. I'm clueless.
But, you see, I think what this shows is these people are playing a game. I mean, these are people with a lot of money. They're in the East Coast power structure, and their personal lives really aren't anything like they profess, but it's what they do to pander to their constituency.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it works.
And it works. And it's well organized, and it's very, very well funded. It's really quite remarkable to me that the people that I've known over the years who have participated in the right-wing media machine and the kind of money that they can make. It's just, it's, I'm not going to say it's tempting, but it's startling.
Did you read David Brock's latest book?
I read Blinded by the Right when it first came out a couple of years ago.
Well, the one after that, the Republican sound machine?
Oh, the noise machine. The Republican noise machine.
That really shows what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Actually, you know, it's funny. I got the book on tape of that and listened to it on a trip, and I had completely forgotten that I read it because it wasn't a physical book.
Thank you for reminding me. Wasn't it funny, too, how the fact that he was gay was never mentioned until he made a move to the left?
Yeah.
And then it became an issue.
Yeah, all of a sudden, yeah. Well, part of his problem, I think, was part one of his concerns was that when he was on the right, he had to, be discreet about it, as it were.
Or else keep his feelings to himself.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure a lot of anti-gay remarks were made. Maybe people didn't even know that he was.
Right, yeah. A tough time. Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Here's what you can do for Buy Nothing Day. Get off your butt! Say what? Well, this is a new study that was just done, a very substantial study that was done in Shanghai, China. National Cancer Institute, the U.S. Maryland-based National Cancer Institute. Helped put this study together and fund it and pull it together because they were able to find a population, a large urban population, that was in the middle of going through a transition that you no longer see in the United States. It's a transition that we went through in the 40s and 50s. And it's the transition from people mostly walking or riding bicycles to work to people driving in cars or taking mass transit to work. That is, from going to work under their own steam to going to work, on fueled by electricity or gasoline or like that. And what they found was that those people who continued to commute via their own power, that is, those people who walked to work or who rode a bicycle to work, were 50% less likely to get colon cancer. And the study's author notes, we expect to see the same or even greater beneficial effects of incorporating walking and bicycling into our daily commute in the United States, since the U.S. population of commute and by bicycling and walking is relatively small. And it was huge public health benefit. And of course, there have been others to the United States. If people would just start walking, just walk a half a mile or a mile a day. A mile is a 15-minute walk. We walk 3 to 4 miles an hour. You know, a nice fast walk is 4 miles an hour. A nice slow walk, 3 miles an hour. So it takes 15 to 20 minutes to walk a mile. If you just walk for 15 or 20 minutes every day, and ideally if you walk fast enough to get out of breath, your risk of heart disease drops, your risk of cancer drops, your, right across the board, just, you know, great stuff. What are you thankful for today? Feel free to give us a call on that one, too, 1-866-889-8894. Jerry Falwell knows what he's thankful for. Is he thankful for folks out there working to end world hunger? No. End the AIDS epidemic? No. To stop wars? No. To save the environment? No. To help people who are out of work? No. To help people get health care? No. But in his broadcast sermon from a few days ago, November 21st, he said, I thank God now in the 21st century for talk radio that 3 hours a day, people like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and hundreds of others are telling the truth of what's really going on. And I thank God for Fox News Channel. I thank God for the internet bloggers and the news producers like Newsmax.com, WorldNetDaily.com, and even the Drudge Report. That's what Jerry Falwell's thankful for today. How about you? It's the Tom Hartman Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Saturday, as hundreds gathered in San Francisco's Union Square for a rally in solidarity with locked-out hotel workers, Mayor Gavin Newsom announced at his office across town that a deal had been reached to suspend the stalemate for a 60-day cooling-off period. Vinny Lombardo has more.
Unite Here Local 2 members who'd been working without a union contract since August 14th struck at four San Francisco hotels September 29th and were subsequently locked out at 10 others by the Multi-Employer Group, a consortium of San Francisco's 14 largest hotels. Rory O'Connor, a bellman at the Four Seasons, says the workers wanted a wage increase but voted for a two-week strike when the hotels tried to eliminate retiree medical, prescription, and dental coverage from about 1,000 Local 2 members.
We've accepted lower wage increases in return for good benefits. It sounds like it's part of the compensation package.
Another sticking point is the contract's length. Union members say they'd like to renegotiate in 2 years while the hotels want a 5-year deal. To Doe, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 2, says the union also wants to synchronize San Francisco hotel contracts with other cities.
We bring our fight to across North America city. We bring our fight to Hawaii, to Monterey, to Chicago, to New York, to send them the message that we're not going to be isolated in San Francisco.
The rank-and-file workers at Saturday's rally were elated at the news they'd soon be back on the job and are hopeful that the publicity generated will parlay into the contract they want. For now, the pickets are down. On Tuesday, 4,300 hotel workers will start rotating back into their shifts without conditions while the talks continue. But until a deal is inked, the situation remains tenuous, and Local 2 members say they are prepared to resume the pickets if a fair contract isn't offered. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Give thanks and praises to the moon sky. Give thanks and praises so high.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting conversation in the chat room. It started out with Condi and George W. and speculating whether she was his mandate, and then going to bonding, and then to reptiles bonding with inanimate objects, and then ducks, and then how do human brains develop, and now we're into pheromones, and you're really missing something if you're not reading this thing. You go to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. It'll get you in there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Cumberland, Maryland on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's actually Cumberland, Virginia, believe it or not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, quite all right, quite all right. Well, listen, I just started listening to you guys today on iTunes, and your program is just incredible. My concern is it should be going out over the air, and people are not hearing
it. It is going out over the air.
Actually, the media is really just destroyed.
Well, let me set you straight, Rick. This program is being heard right now live on radio stations from California to North Carolina.
Really?
Yeah. The first hour of our three-hour program is beamed live on the Sirius satellite, and then all 3 hours are run tape-delayed in the evening, and plus on Saturday and Sunday they take our Thursday and Friday show and run them all day, or not all day, for three hours.
Fantastic.
Even.
Yeah, fantastic.
So no, this
well, I'll tell you, because here...
yeah, you found us on the web, but we're out there.
We saw so much voter fraud. There were machines coming in at 7 a.m. with 350 votes already on them.
Yeah. It's,
and I wonder who those votes were for.
you,
they were
do
carry
you really,
votes, weren't they?
Do you really wonder?
I mean, it's, they must have been carry votes. That's the only way he had a chance.
Well, you know, it's what's really weird is the conspiracy theories on the right. I mean, during on election day, on a lot of the right-wing blogs and some of the right-wing news sites, there were these stories about how Kerry was trying to steal the election because they were looking at the same exit poll results everybody else was, and they were thinking, okay, Kerry is going to win this thing, and so they were setting up their kind of counter-argument. And those stories all went away, of course, the next day, but they were there. I mean, I was looking at them and you know, watching this stuff, and they were going, oh, look at this machine had votes in it. That must have been for Kerry. So, there you go.
Well, I think we all knew who they were for. I mean, it's just amazing. And, of course, really... I mean, to be honest, Kerry was not all that fantastic a candidate anyway, but frankly, I would have voted for Mr. Ed over George Bush.
Yeah, me too. You know, in a heartbeat.
But yeah, the media really needs to back off of the whole right-wing mentality, because that's all these people are generally.
Well, here's my take on this, Rick. I think, and by the way, Bev Harris is going to be on our show tomorrow in the second hour of our program talking about what's going on in Florida. I think we need both. I think we need right-wing and left-wing. Then we have a true dialogue, a true debate, and I think that's a healthy thing.
Yeah, but they clamped rules on the left.
Oh, I know. Well, that's the whole point. I mean, we need to stop that. Rick, thanks for the call. I got to go. We're out of time here for this hour. We'll be back after the news on many of our stations, and certainly for our web listeners. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Holiday drivers passing through Pennsylvania on Wednesday may have thought the state was giving them a Thanksgiving gift by not charging for tolls. In actuality, toll workers across the state began a strike on Wednesday, angered by management's refusal to meet their contract demands. Represented by the Teamsters, union members have been working under a contract that expired in September of 2003. The strike continues today, with the Turnpike Commission bringing in temporary workers to collect a flat fee at the tolls.
This week, representatives from food banks throughout the state of New Jersey asked the state legislature for help in assisting the thousands of people in need of not only a Thanksgiving dinner, but food aid year-round.
We were very worried. It was keeping me up at night because we were so seriously short of turkeys. A little more than a week ago, we only had 20, and we were serving 2,600 families.
Patricia Espy is the executive director of the Center for Food Action in New Jersey. She says she's seen a 15% increase in the number of people seeking assistance from last year.
When I first started 17 years ago, a lot of that was single moms and kids. But more and more we're seeing two-parent households with both parents working, and they're still not coming up to the federal poverty level, which is about $18,600 for a family of four.
New Jersey allocated just $338,000 for emergency food this year. According to the Food Research and Action Center, more than 33 million Americans suffer from food insecurity.
More than 34 unions in Brewer, Maine joined together to help collect Thanksgiving meals for 150 families of workers who lost their jobs. Eastern Fine Paper Company closed its doors last January, leaving many workers struggling to find a new job. Dubbed the Solidarity Harvest, the unions collected turkeys, canned goods, and produce from local farmers to put together the Thanksgiving baskets. The giving didn't just begin with Thanksgiving Day. Over the past year, mill workers at International Paper in Bucksport, Maine, have donated more than $50,000 to help out their labor brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket in the U.S. According to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the typical cost of a family health insurance policy was $8,800 in 2003.
Rates have been rising in excess of 10% per year. At that rate, a decade from now, a family health insurance policy will cost $21,000 per year. That's 42% of the projected average base wage expected at that time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by Billionaires for Bush.
George W. says that one of his top three legislative priorities is, quote, lawsuit reform, to keep us pesky citizens from suing corporations. Frivolous lawsuits, he calls them. But I wonder if his legislation will go the other way, too, stopping corporations from filing frivolous lawsuits against us ordinary Joes and Jills. Take the case of Alvis Coatings, Inc., an outfit that makes spray-on siding for homes. Hordes of unhappy customers have complained about the poor quality of its spray-on stuff. But rather than make amends or, in the best free enterprise tradition, improve its product, Alvis has unleashed its corporate legal beagles to sue a Georgia couple that were merely trying to get a little justice over what they consider a rip-off. Alan and Linda Townsend paid more than $16,000 for an Alvis spray-on job on their home, an unsightly job that left them decidedly unhappy. So they used their First Amendment free speech rights to create a website about their experience with Alvis's product. Soon, other angry Alvis customers began posting their own stories on the Townsend's website, telling how the coating on their homes had cracked, bubbled, and buckled. Next thing you know, the corporation sued Alan and Linda, asserting that the couple's website defames its product, confuses other consumers, and infringes on Alvis's trademarks. Alvis demanded $75,000 in damages plus punitive damages and attorney's fees. Such a judgment could ruin the Townsends, a middle-class family whose entire home is valued at about $150,000. Of course, corporations file such suits hoping to scare off any critics. But Alan and Linda have not backed off. Theirs has become a crucial case about online free speech. As long as this stuff is on our house, says Linda, we're going to talk about it. This is Jim Hightower saying, to encourage the Townsends in this landmark case, call Public Citizen, 202-588-1000.
Good game, Mike.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you on, some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With Score Power from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 7.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, and happy Thanksgiving, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, live on radio stations all across the United States, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, on the Internet. Cable radio network, bringing us into cable TV systems in 29 states. All over the place. Our number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. What are you thankful for today? I'm thankful for a lot of things. I'm thankful for the nation that I was born into. I'm thankful for my parents and for my parents for the extraordinary, difficult job that they did of raising me. I'm sure I was not an easy kid. I'm thankful to my wife for putting up with me for 32 years, and the years before that we dated. I'm thankful to each one of my children for being such extraordinary human beings. I'm thankful to the founders of this nation for creating, for having the courage to say, let's try something that hasn't been tried, with one single small exception, and that being Athens, Greece, and they didn't even do it the way we're going to do it. Let's try something that hasn't been tried in 7,000 years. And we believe we can make it work. And I think out of our acknowledgement of that, we have an obligation to make it work, to continue to make it work. And here's what it's come to. Here is what it has come to. This story from the Associated Press, byline or dateline, Lawton, Oklahoma. A 72-year-old great-grandmother is preparing for deployment to the war zone in Iraq. No, I am not making this up. I'm reading you the actual AP story. Yesterday's, Wednesday, November 24th, yesterday's paper on the article in the Associated Press, a 72-year-old great-grandmother is preparing for deployment to the war zone in Iraq. She will be the oldest Department of Defense worker in the civilian worker in the war zone. I volunteered, says Lena Haddix of Lawton, which is reassuring, by the way, that she volunteered. She has 5 children, 8 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren. She says, I wanted to do something for the country because I was always left behind taking care of the children. Haddix was a military wife from 1950 until 1979 and has worked at the Fort Sill Post Exchange, or PX, since 1977. She said, I see so many of the boys. They're like little kids. They keep telling me, I'm going over, or I've just come back. And she says, I would just like to go over and be with them. She is about to be sent to Fort Bliss, Texas for 1 week of training, then will be sent to Germany where she will receive her orders on where in Iraq she will be stationed. Lena Haddix, 72 years old, preparing for her deployment to Iraq. Yes, you heard it here. China has some words for us about our economic straits. We'll get to those in just a minute. 1-866, toll free, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you're outside the United States. I see Atomic in our chat room is in Prague, Czechoslovakia, listening to the program. Hey, Atomic, greetings to Prague. Louise and I once, when we lived in Germany, we tried to get over to Czechoslovakia. And we drove to the border. I forget what the border city is now. And sat for about 10 hours in our car. This was, of course, before the fall. This was in 86. And because it just took so long to get through the checkpoints. And finally, we just gave up and turned around because we would have blown the day. We were just going to make it a day trip. And so we never got to Prague. I have always wanted to go to Prague. I lived probably 300 kilometers from there. Where we lived was just maybe 40 clicks from the Czech border, and for a year, and never made it happen. But I've heard it's a beautiful, beautiful city. So anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Roy in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. This is a beautiful day to be thankful for.
Amen.
I just thought I'd kind of chime in. There is so much to be thankful for that you just sometimes forget. But I think one of the things that I'm most thankful for is that over the last few years, that I've learned that in the middle of the problem, you start looking for possibilities.
Hmm.
And when you look for the possibilities, you can find something to be thankful for no matter what the problem is.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I think that there's something, well, I don't think it, I know it, that there is something very important and healthy about an attitude of thankfulness that is regularly, in fact, daily, in my opinion, reinforced. I think that people who every day make a ritual out of experiencing thankfulness, the way I do it is in prayer, but my prayer always opens up, thank you for this life. I mean, that's how it begins.
And to look for little things to be thankful for,
yeah.
Because when you can be comfortable with little things, it makes the the major hurdles a little easier to handle.
And I think that this is one of the keys to psychological resilience, to emotional resilience, and to psychological well-being. It's just so vitally important. Because the reality is, as you know, NLP trainers have pointed out for decades, and Tony Robbins points out so eloquently, you can only think about one thing at a time.
That's right.
And you know, you're always focusing your attention on basically one thing. And so if you take some time and intend, you know, put with your intention, with your will, and say, I'm going to intentionally focus on things that I'm grateful for, or things that I'm happy about, or things that are blessings to me, things that are positive, things that are optimistic, things that are hopeful, a positive vision for the future, that's what your life will become. And there's
always a choice.
That's right. That's right.
It might be a lousy choice, but at least you make the best of a lousy situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're staying positive. Yeah. We are so blessed. I just hope that we can make sure that we control our blessing and keep control of our country. And I think we will.
Yeah. I think we will too.
I appreciate you, and I'm thankful that you guys are on the air. Gore that he invented the internet.
There you go. You know that was a Republican. By the way, Roy, you know that that's a Republican story. Al Gore never said he invented the internet.
I know that.
Yeah, he never said that. The Republicans made that up, and then they smeared him with their own lie. It's really quite amazing.
It's kind of like pollution. You know, destroy it, and then that way you can build it up.
Yeah.
Destroy something, you can build it up.
Bomb them back.
Build it up, destroy it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So anyway, have a great one.
Thanks. Take you care. Too, Roy. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. China, formerly a nation that lived in desperate poverty to a large extent. The last time I was there was, 14 years ago. So it's been a while. I haven't seen China since it has exploded in economic growth. The last time I was there, I literally, it was in 1987, I stood in Tiananmen Square, and there's this big street out in front of Tiananmen Square, big, like, 8-lane street, and it was just a sea of black bicycles. Everywhere you go, black bicycles, and about every 2 or 3 minutes, a car would go by. And there were these huge, long strips of metal with slots in them that people would park their bicycles in, and they all looked the same. It was funny, but everybody knew whose bicycle was which, I guess. And now you see, for those who've been there, they know, but I haven't been there. But I see on TV, you see these pictures of traffic in Beijing, and now Beijing has this terrible problem with air pollution and gridlock and traffic jams and whatnot, because they're booming. They're just absolutely booming. Why? In large part because of Walmart. And the whole generation, this whole arc of companies in the United States that import goods from China and thus shut down our manufacturing facilities here in the United States. We no longer make our clothing here. We no longer make our shoes here. We no longer make our hats here. We no longer make our computers here. The list just goes on and on and on. Bedroom furniture is the one that now about 40% of our bedroom furniture is imported. They're going to reduce the last of the tariffs on bedroom furniture, the restrictions to free trade, which actually protect industries. You're going to see over the next few months a couple of companies in, I think they're down in North and South Carolina, probably go out of business. Because you're going to see the imports of bedroom furniture go from 40% of our bedroom furniture sold in the United States being imported up to 60, 70, 80, 90, eventually 100% in all probability. So here's China, growing like a weed. And I guess they've decided that they know what's best. And the fact of the matter is, if you view this as a conflict, I'm reluctant to use the word war. Let's say competition. A competition between China and the United States. China is winning. We have gone in the essentially 25 years since Reaganomics first was inflicted on the United States. Conservative economics. In that 25 years, we have gone from being the leading lender to the world to being the largest debtor in the world. In fact, our debt consumes 80% of the entire planet's savings, which, you know, most people point out is unsustainable. We have gone from being the leading manufacturing exporting nation in the world to being the leading manufactured products importer in the world. And we have gone from being an importer of agricultural goods to being, well, we've been an exporter of agricultural goods basically since the 40s. But we've become one of the largest, the world's largest exporters of raw materials. Agricultural goods, you know, grains, foods, mostly grains, hides, wood, wood chips, scrap paper. We export scrap paper to China. We get back cardboard boxes with goods inside them. We have become a third world nation when you look at us in the context of trade. And China has rapidly become a first world nation, you know, using that index. And they know it. So here in an interview with the Financial Times, Li Rozhu, the deputy governor of the People's Bank of China, warned the U.S. not to blame other countries for its economic difficulties. In fact, he said, and I quote, "The U.S. has the reverse attitude. Whenever they have a problem, they blame others." Well, it's not the U.S., Mr. Rozhu, who has that problem. It's the Bush administration. They're incapable of taking responsibility. But anyhow, Mr. Li, who spoke before the meeting of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum last weekend, said China did not want to run trade surpluses or accumulate foreign currency reserves, which currently stand at $515 billion. But we're kind of forcing them into it. And the result, the dollar is collapsing. We get into that. We got a Bush Green Watch coming up. A little bit of street theater and a special about the blue states. Stick around, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, "To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times." Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I like country stores with crooked floors and old men on the front porch and one-lane bridges on a rural route.
And what do you like?
I like to drive for miles and miles and never see no blacktop. To me, that's what this country life's about.
Well, now we're getting into country and western music here. Welcome back. It's 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from behind the good old stainless steel working class microphone here in the People's Republic of Vermont. 1-866-889-8894. Our toll-free telephone number, 1-802-229-2288. If you're outside the United States or if you'd like to pay for the call. Preston in Denver on the phone. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Like your previous caller, I'm thankful for the people who invented the Internet as well. Yeah. And I guess that's us in many ways, through public investment to our public universities and research through the military and all sorts of cooperative efforts that came to be.
That's right. The Internet was created with tax dollars and sustained, and to a large extent, even to this day, is sustained with tax dollars. The infrastructure, the rights of way particularly, is, you could argue, is part of the commons.
Yes, exactly. And specifically, I'm thankful today for your message board. I've often enjoyed the exchanges that take place there. And I actually added a comment on something that you had remarked on earlier regarding white Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And you said some of the colonists had kind of decided to live with the indigenous people.
Yeah, actually, I wrote a chapter about that in my most recent book, too, What Would Jefferson Do? There's a whole chapter about that phenomena.
Oh, interesting, because I had found a comment from Ben Franklin who said, "No European who has tasted savage life can afterwards bear to live in our societies."
Yes, that quote is in that chapter.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, along with a couple of others. Ben Franklin, Franklin, Madison, and Jefferson were the three who were the most, and John Hancock, oddly enough, were the ones who were the most fascinated with Native American societies and cultures.
I'm also thankful for the people, you know, who sewed my jeans together and who picked my food, many immigrants oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for the fair trade efforts and the efforts of people to protect the rights of those people who are laboring for us every single day, sometimes under very harsh conditions.
Yeah.
And lastly, I wanted to say a thanks to the artists who are so helpful in so many ways. But most recently, I got to check out Neil Young's DVD Greendale.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it.
Excuse me?
I haven't seen it. Is it?
I think it's fantastic. It has a very strong environmental responsibility message. The music is just great. I've long been a fan of Neil Young,
mm-hmm.
and I was just really struck by this production.
Yeah.
And anyway,
well, that's great.
I just want to say hello and wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you, Preston.
You know, thank you for all the work you're doing.
Well, we're dancing our hearts out here, but we're having a good time doing it. So I hope that's true of you as well. Thank you, and have a happy Thanksgiving, Preston. I appreciate the call, and it's great to hear from you. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to weigh in on any topic, talk about anything you want today. I believe tomorrow we're going to have Congressman Bernie Sanders with us in our first hour, as always. In our second hour, we're going to have Bev Harris of Black Box Voting on. She's going to tell you about what she has discovered that CNN didn't want to know about in Florida. She believes she's found actual smoking gun proof of pretty substantial voter fraud down there. And so we'll talk about that in the second hour of the program tomorrow. China, just to wrap this thing up, China has now generated a surplus of $515 billion. And here's this Chinese official, he says, we certainly don't want to run into the U.S. situation of having a trade deficit of 6% of GDP. This is not sustainable, he added. And he says the problem will not be solved by the U.S. Trying to just change its currency. He says they should give up textiles, shoemaking, and even agriculture, probably. Yeah, just put us out of business. That's what it'll take. 29 minutes before the hour.
Tonight, NBC starts with an all-new one-hour Will and Grace Thanksgiving.
Why don't I get a bottle of champagne?
That's a nice idea.
What would you guys like?
Followed by an all-new Apprentice, down to 6 finalists. Then, just 2 words.
Oh, yeah!
The Seinfeld Story.
Oh, I'm back, baby.
The cast returns in a new Seinfeld special.
Can you believe it? It's happening!
Thanksgiving Thursday, Will and Grace, The Apprentice, and The Seinfeld Special, NBC Tonight.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Holiday drivers passing through Pennsylvania on Wednesday may have thought that the state was giving them a Thanksgiving gift by not charging for tolls. In actuality, toll workers across the state began a strike on Wednesday, angered by management's refusal to meet their contract demands. Represented by the Teamsters, union members have been working under a contract that expired in September of 2003. The strike continues today, with the Turnpike Commission bringing in temporary workers to collect a flat fee at the tolls.
This week, representatives from food banks throughout the state of New Jersey asked the state legislature for help in assisting the thousands of people in need of not only a Thanksgiving dinner, but food aid year-round.
We were very worried. It was keeping me up at night because we were so seriously short of turkeys. A little more than a week ago, we only had 20, and we were serving 2,600 families.
Patricia Espy is the executive director of the Center for Food Action in New Jersey. She says she's seen a 15% increase in the number of people seeking assistance from last year.
When I first started 17 years ago, a lot of that was single moms and kids, but more and more we're seeing two-parent households with both parents working, and they're still not coming up to the federal poverty level, which is about $18,600 for a family of four.
New Jersey allocated just $338,000 for emergency food this year. According to the Food Research and Action Center, more than 33 million Americans suffer from food insecurity.
More than 34 unions in Brewer, Maine joined together to help collect Thanksgiving meals for 150 families of workers who lost their jobs. Eastern Fine Paper Company closed its doors last January, leaving many workers struggling to find a new job. Dubbed the Solidarity Harvest, the unions collected turkeys, canned goods, and produce from local farmers to put together the Thanksgiving baskets. The giving didn't just begin with Thanksgiving Day. Over the past year, mill workers at International Paper in Bucksport, Maine, have donated more than $50,000 to help out their labor brothers and sisters who have been displaced.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket in the U.S. According to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the typical cost of a family health insurance policy was $8,800 in 2003. Rates have been rising in excess of 10% per year. At that rate, a decade from now, a family health insurance policy will cost $21,000 per year. That's 42% of the projected average base wage expected at that time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Say what you want.
And welcome back. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman here with you, actually. That's me, live today. And it's time now for a Bush Green Watch alert. U.S. is foremost among 16 nations seeking an exemption from guidelines set out in the 1987 Montreal Protocol for the phase-out of methyl bromide, a potent ozone-depleting chemical used for agricultural purposes. The U.S., I got to tell you, what is methyl bromide? Methyl bromide was developed during World War II as a nerve gas. It causes reproductive problems. Exposure to it has been linked to an increased risk of prostate cancer. And it's on our food. This courtesy of the Bush administration and their corporate buddies. The U.S. is requesting permission to use 9,379 metric tons of the neurotoxin next year, in 2006. We were supposed to have phased it out already. But it's a cheap pesticide. And although it's an incredible destroyer of the ozone layer. Methyl bromide, brought to you by your friends at the Bush administration and their corporate buddies. Our Bush Green Watch alert for the day. The blue states. Do you live in a blue state? You could be in for an interesting time when your tax returns get filled out next April. President Bush's revenue-neutral tax reform. Whenever you hear a politician talk about something being revenue-neutral, well, not just a politician, in general, just consider the logic of it for a minute. We're going to change things, but it's going to have no effect. I mean, that's what they're trying to say, right? We're going to change things, but it's going to have no effect. And when you hear that, it's time to grab your wallet. George Bush says he's going to make the tax code, he's going to change the tax code, but it's going to be revenue neutral. Well, what that means, of course, is it's not going to increase or decrease the total amount of taxes collected. We're just going to collect them from different people. So what are the changes that he wants to make? Well, we know the ones that he's announced he wants to make. He wants to no longer tax income on dividends. So if you make your living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive in the mail, already in the last tax cut, Bush's 2003 tax cut, he cut your tax rate from the normal income tax rate down to a maximum of 15%. So, you know, if you're a recipient of dividend income, and you don't have to pay FICA either on dividend income, you don't have to pay any Social Security tax, you don't have to pay into the Medicare Trust Fund, none of that stuff. Your employer doesn't have to match. I mean, you don't have an employer, but you don't have to pay any of those taxes. Well, he wants to eliminate that tax altogether. So if you make your living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, you will pay no taxes. Similarly, he wants to eliminate the tax on capital gains. So if you own a business and you sell it, you will pay no tax on the profit from that sale. Or anything else of great wealth. You know, if if you collect antiques or something, anything that's going to create a real significant capital gain, a real significant appreciation in value. And there are people who, I mean, a lot of people, who make their living generating capital gains. People who buy houses and build and fix them up and then sell them off. People who, there's just a whole lot. It's basically, you know, running a business in disguise, as it were. So those are going to happen, or at least Bush says they're going to happen. But perhaps the most disconcerting of all of the tax so-called reform changes, again, when they start using the word reform, then it's time to, I mean, when you hear the word reform, that's actually when you should be hearing this music. I'm thinking, uh-oh, tax reform? Yes, and we're going to reform the environmental laws, and we're going to reform Medicaid, and we're going to reform Social Security, and we're going to reform the laws about prisons and... Oh, my. We're going to reform. Well, we'll stop inflicting that on you. Anyhow, perhaps the most insidious of all the tax reform measures, it's getting old now, isn't it, is that they are going to eliminate the tax deduction on state income tax. Now, here's what's interesting about this. If you, for example, here in Vermont, the way the state income tax works is whatever your federal taxable income is, you just take 25% of that, or whatever your federal income tax is, you just take 25% of that, that's your state income tax. Okay. But then there's this interesting little kind of feedback loop, and that is that the state income tax that I pay, for example, I can deduct from my federal income tax. In other words, I don't have to pay income tax on the money that I use to pay my state income tax. I don't have to pay federal income tax on it. So I can pay my state income tax with before tax dollars rather than after tax dollars. So if you earn $100 after taxes, it's, say, $80. You can actually pay your state income taxes with the $100, not with the $80. So you're following what I'm saying, I'm sure. And those states that will be hurt the most by a repeal of the federal tax deductibility of the state income tax are, in descending order of significance, the top 10 states that will be hit: California, number one. The citizens of California will have to pay an additional $46 billion in federal income tax because that tax loophole or tax deduction has been eliminated. Who did California vote for in the election that just happened? Number two, the number two state that will be hit by this elimination of the state income tax deductibility, New York. They're going to have to pay, citizens of New York will have to pay an extra $34.7 billion. Number three is Ohio, which just barely went to Bush. 70,000 people had changed their vote. It would have been a Kerry state. The fourth is Pennsylvania, $11 billion. Pennsylvania taxpayers are going to have to cough up. That went to Kerry. The fifth is Massachusetts, $10.3 billion additional tax dollars. They're going to have to pay Massachusetts taxpayers to federal taxes. That went to Kerry. Number six, Michigan, $10.1 billion. It's a Kerry state. Number seven, Illinois, $9.9 billion. It was a Kerry state, a blue state. Number eight, New Jersey, $8.5 million, a blue state, Kerry state. Number nine, North Carolina, 8.4 went to Bush. The only one really in this bunch that solidly went to Bush. And number 10, Maryland, $7.6 billion, another blue state. So basically, George Bush is saying, let's change the law to jack up the taxes on the blue states. Now, what impact is this going to have on the red states? Well, interestingly, as Marilyn Gewax of the Cox News Service writes in this article in today's newspaper, blue states could lose key deduction in tax reform. She makes this note. She says, seven states are big gainers under the new law because they have sales taxes but little or no income tax. Six of the seven states that will gain from this change are Texas, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Tennessee, and Wyoming, and they all voted for Bush. Can you spell reward your friends and punish your enemies? Of course, it's the It's the slogan at the Bush White House. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida, on the line. Hey, Armin, what are you thankful for today?
Your show.
Well, that's the politically correct answer, but there's got to be more than that. Thank you for that, by the way.
I guess, to be quite honest,
and turn off your radio.
You know, I'm thankful that I'm still free enough that I can call a show like yours and a show like yours is in existence and for educational purposes and debate and discussion.
Yeah.
And, you know, it keeps the candle of hope somewhat alive.
Well, thank you, Armin. What's on your mind? What are you calling about?
As far as tax goes, what the half-truth right wing consistently, for obvious reasons, fails to educate their listeners on is the whole thing with taxation is it's taken from somebody and it circulates to a degree, usually, and you know it always ends up with the insiders that give money.
Not always.
Well, mostly it does, Tom. I mean, come on, the working class at the lower end, they don't get to keep what they earn because so much of it goes out because there's a built-in cost of living that is so high now for almost anybody in this country. I don't care who you are or where you are in the United States. It's you know, it's just about $30,000 just to keep from, you know, living on the street.
Yeah.
You know, the cost of living. So
no, I'm not disagreeing with you.
So what I'm saying, like Florida is a good example, like two-thirds of the people in Florida now are making $24,000 or less a year. You know, it's a contemporary third world.
Two-thirds. Well, you know, a lot of those are, you know, there is a caveat to that because a lot of the folks in Florida who have low incomes actually have high net worth. They're people who have retired. They're living on Social Security, but they've got $500,000 stashed in the bank.
Well, I'm talking about the working class, though. I should have qualified it.
Okay.
That's the ones that I'm concerned of the retirees, but I'm also concerned with the working class because if they're fortunate, they will be tomorrow's retirees.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the best kept secrets about taxation is and deficit spending and the whole economic system is the rich, the wealthy, for too long, I think, have been the ones that's been in power that's designed with a D, all these systems. And the fact is that on an individual basis, they benefit the most on an individual basis of all the tax cuts, all the tax increases, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Change or shifted. And a lot of people, or not a lot of people, but too many people on the right that are uneducated, that let the corporate propagandists like Sean Hannity, Fox, Rush, getting a Rush Limbaugh, those kind of people just totally engulf their mind with half truths and half stories and just enough to keep the people permanently ignorant.
Yeah, well said, Armin. I don't disagree with you, and that's why I'm here. And I know that's why you're there, and I know that's what, you know, what you're doing, and I salute you, and I thank you, and I'm thankful for you, Armin. I'm thankful for you being a longtime listener to this program and a regular caller, one of the many things that I'm thankful for today. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. David, Mount Sinai, New York, on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot. One thing, I'm thankful for many things, but one thing is I have the opportunity to choose organic food.
There you go.
And I, you know, I feel in terms of power that I have as an individual, buying organic food is powerful.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Louise and I do a lot of our shopping at the local organic co-op. In fact, what's interesting is how the local store here, the local Shaw's, you know, the local supermarket, is now stocking large quantities of organic food. I don't know if it's just something that's funky about little towns in Vermont or if it's a national trend.
Organic business is growing.
Yeah.
Dramatically.
I think it's because, you know, one in three people in America get cancer, and people are starting to put two and two together.
Well, I feel politically, if I eat organic food, and I also grow my own food now, if I could keep money out of corporations that I do not support, such as drug companies and you know, the medical system the way it is, you know, I think that's a great first step for me.
Yeah.
And listening to your show is certainly giving me other ideas as to what what other things I could do.
Yeah. Thank you, David. And I appreciate it. I appreciate the comment and the call. Louise mentions in Montpelier, the organic co-op has more folks buying than Shaw's. We actually, our health food store here in town, or the organic food co-op, has a larger consumer base than the national supermarket chain. So here's something to be thankful for. Workers are starting to fight back. Workers, this from an article by Stephen Greenhouse, The New York Times, forced to work off the clock, some fight back. Workers at hair salons, supermarkets, restaurants, discount stores, call centers, car washes, and other businesses who have murmured only to one another about the off-the-clock work are now speaking up and documenting the illegal practice. See, it's illegal for an employer to say, your workday starts at noon, but please show up 15 minutes early. You have to pay them for that 15 minutes early. Otherwise, it's called off-the-clock work. And it is very common in America, and it adds up to a lot. Its prevalence is Alfred Robinson, director of the Wage and Hour Division of the Labor Department. It's one of the more common violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Workers interviewed said the off-the-clock work took place at a variety of companies, according to this article by Stephen Greenhouse. A&P, J.P. Morgan Chase, Pep Boys, Ryan's Family Steakhouses, TGF Precision Haircutters, and Smart Style, on and on it goes. Off-the-clock work can take many forms, he notes. Employees are sometimes told that it is the way people advance in a company. Other times, they're forced to show up early or stay late under threat of losing their jobs. A whole variety of these things. Many people who study business practices say off-the-clock work has become more prevalent because middle managers face greater pressure to lower labor costs. Because, of course, the corporations need to be more profitable so that they can send larger dividends checks to those people who are calling the shots as they sit around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive. They face greater pressure to lower labor costs, and because managers' bonuses may even be tied to cutting those costs. There's more of this stuff going on than 10 and 20 and especially 30 and 40 years ago, says David Lewin, a human resources manager at the Anderson School of Management at the University of California. Why? I'll tell you why. Because we don't have unions in the United States. We've gone from 25% of the workforce unionized under Ronald Reagan when Reagan first came into power and declared war on organized labor down to 8% of the private workforce now. That's one of the large reasons why this is happening. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is the Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Recently, AT&T announced it is outsourcing 140 jobs from a Massachusetts call center to New Delhi, an American trend that's providing widespread debate. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
In his nomination speech, President Bush said the world is changing, but he will protect American jobs.
We now compete in a global market that provides new buyers for our goods, but new competition for our workers. To create jobs, we will expand trade and level the playing field to sell American goods and services across the globe.
But at the New York Society for Ethical Culture in Midtown Manhattan, National Affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, William Greider, said American trade indebtedness to other countries, which is closely tied to wage arbitration, is breaking the shrinking middle class. The liberal magazine, The Nation, and the economically conservative, The Economist, hotly debated outsourcing. According to some studies, more than 400,000 jobs will be outsourced to cheaper markets this year, a trend that seems to be inevitable by free trade policies. Sitting on The Nation side of the table, Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, said the world of the World Trade Organization is a contradiction and that the WTO are simply handcuffs. But Clive Crook is deputy editor for The Economist. He said the American economy is the most resilient and new industries will replace those lost to outsourcing.
American unemployment, despite intense globalization for the past 2 decades now, has not gone up.
But those new industries are unknown. By the end of the debate, the audience was still split in its opinions, but an estimated 90 jobs were moved overseas in those 2 hours. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There are sorrows enough for the whole world's end. There are no guarantees but the grave.
Well, that's kind of grim.
And the lives that we live and the times we have spent are a treasure too precious to save.
There you go. That's the upside of it. Thank you. Welcome back. I knew there had to be something nice in there. Louise wouldn't have put it into our music rotation. Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. I started to make a point earlier in, I believe it was the last hour, and I just want to close this thing up and because it's germane, I think, to Thanksgiving and really to any time. It's just one of those eternal truths that is so fascinating to me. The way that we achieve safety and security in our society, by and large, is by producing goods and services. That is, we work and we earn money, and then we try to achieve safety and security with that money. Housing, food, clothing, things like that. And the problem with this, not that this is a bad thing, but the problem with this is that the way that we achieve true safety and security is not through goods and services, and it's not through money. It's through our relationships with other people. In fact, when you look at people in indigenous societies, and I've worked and lived among people in Aboriginal and indigenous societies in Australia, in North America, in South America, in Africa, in India. When you work among these people, you get it, that they don't make goods and services all day long to acquire money to get safety and security. What they do all day long is they actually produce safety and security. In other words, they're part of a community, and they're constantly strengthening the community, and whatever they're making is for the community, and whatever they need comes out of the community. And I don't mean that in the Marxist sense. I mean that in the community. You know what I'm talking about. This is like family stuff. This is community stuff. This is where we ground ourselves. And it's so important, I think, at least one day a year that we just take a moment and focus on that fact. That the real foundation of our security, the real foundation of our safety, the real foundation of our lives is not in what we do or what we have, but who we are close to and what and how we share ourselves with those people around us. And one of the great lessons of ancient societies and cultures and of common sense, I suppose. So on this day, I want to say thank you on this Thanksgiving Day. Thank you for listening to the program. Thank you for sharing with your friends. Thank you for being a fellow human being on this planet Earth, which needs our prayers every day. Thanks to Louise for producing our program, too, today, and the folks in our chat room for showing up. Much appreciated. See you tomorrow.
And listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the